I'm Jerry Barmash, and this is Here Now the News. A new era in Washington, but the peaceful transition never happened. All points surrounding the Capitol were in lockdown to avoid another insurrection that led to 7 deaths, including the killing of a police officer. Joe Biden begins as president amidst the violence, seeking unity after Donald Trump's reckless election fraud claims. It was the spark for weeks that sent many right-wing extremists to D.C. to cause harm and chant for the execution of Mike Pence. Trump spent the final week in office as a 2-time impeached president for inciting the terrorists. My guest today is Terry Boughton, an associate professor of history at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, who with his photographer wife was a witness to that ugly and scary moment in our nation on January 6th. He first told people via social media with a 22-part tweet. Along with detailing the insurrection from outside the building, Boughton talks about Trump's role and responsibility for inciting the mob. What led you to be at this, what started at the Stop the Steal rally that President Trump was at and then moved over to the Capitol itself? What led you to be there?
It was my wife. She's an avid photographer. We had been to most of the other, you know, major protests of the Trump era, starting with the Women's March in January of 2017, and, you know, been to the March on Science and a number of other protests, Second Women's March, whatever. She'd wanted to do sort of a bookend to that experience by going to the last and of the big protest, which was Stop the Steal. We were participants in the other protest. This one we were just going purely as observers. I was really reluctant to go because I had been aware through, you know, social media and news reports and other things that there was violence planned for this. There were groups like the Proud Boys were going to be there, some of the Oath Keepers, and groups that had been promising violence at this event. And so I didn't want to go. And my wife convinced me to go because she's like, you know, it's D.C. And D.C. does protests, knows how to do protests. Every other event we had been there had a sizable law enforcement presence. And so, you know, our assumption was that because this was a protest in which there had already been considerable threats of violence, that it would be, you know, there would be a lot of police there. And we would be able to stand on the outskirts of it, and she could take pictures, and we could, you know, see what was going on. And then if things got, you know, too hairy, we could get out of there. And so we had throughout, there were so few police there, and such little police presence that we had no idea how bad things were when we got there. Now, we didn't get there we weren't there for the Trump rally or the march from the Capitol to the White House, or from the White House to the Capitol. We got there about 2. We arrived at the Cap. We drove down, got at the Capitol, you know, Union Station garage, about 2, which is about the time that the rioters had broken through the outer barriers of the around the grounds. We arrived at the Capitol at about the time that they just after they had broken into the Capitol and breached the Capitol.
I think by that point, I was watching on TV, and by my wife had a dental appointment at 1, I think, and by 1:30, a quarter to 2, it was, you could see right there on the screen. First off, they were crossing the barriers at the steps,
right?
And then little by little, they got in, they went through the side and broke the window and went in the door. Did you hear any reports as you got there?
No, we didn't hear it. All we heard, when we got there, the first, like, so we walked from Union Station down Delaware Avenue. And not sure how familiar you are with DC, but on the way you pass the Senate Park, and there had been a permitted event there where there was a stage and a sound system set up. And the speaker had been talking about, was like, I got on the mic and was listing the crimes against humanity by Anthony Fauci. And there were, I can't remember, like 13 or 15 crimes against humanity for which they were suggesting he should either be like imprisoned or even potentially executed. And they were including not just Anthony Fauci, but like even Alex Azar and others, like basically the people who were in charge of the response to COVID. So, right. You know, we already realized we were through the looking glass at that point. We walked down, continued down after that and got to the kiosk, the first kiosk, Capitol Police kiosk, which is for a station where they raise and lower the plates in the street that stop, you know, trucks, you know, that were installed after 9/11 to stop truck or car bombs coming. And the officer there was basically saying, you know, you probably don't want to go further than this, that they've, you know, they've breached the Capitol. We were asking her about it, and she said how the protests had been or what was going on. And she said, this is the craziest thing she's seen in 19 years on the force. And she looked alarmed, but we were, you know, we were like, when we heard breach the Capitol, we thought, okay, they busted through and they're, you know, they're holding a sit-in inside or they're
right within the perimeter. Right.
Yeah. We didn't, you know, we didn't know. The force, there were about 10. So we hung out there for probably about 10 minutes. And
how far were you from the Capitol at that point?
That's right outside. Like you can see the Capitol from that place.
Okay.
We eventually kept going. But from that place we were, there were about 10, 8 to 10 Capitol Police who were putting on riot gear. That's also right near where the entrances to the tunnels that they put in after 9/11 to allow, you know, entrance and evacuations from the Capitol. And so they were going in to the Capitol, but we're like, there's just 10 of them there. You know, it's not, we never saw any kind of big police force after that. And we were there for about 3 hours. From about 2 to about 5. And we never saw any, you know, the only reinforcements that came were a couple dozen Capitol Police. There was an FBI, what we assumed to be SWAT team came in. They had, you know, FBI on their uniforms. They rolled up in shiny Humvees. You know, they had all the tactical gear. But they went in to go in. They went there to accompany the EMTs who were going in to get Ashley Babbitt out. And so they went in, and once they got Ashley Babbitt out, they took off. And there was no more SWAT teams. We had no idea, you know, if when we got home and saw the videos, we were astonished and horrified and like we were right there and had no idea of what was going on just inside. And we were right up against the Capitol. There was one point where we were standing, we walked around. When we got there, first of all, we went from that kiosk. We walked around, we went back along the lawn on the back of the Capitol, mm-hmm. Capitol grounds, because we didn't want to, mostly we were worried about COVID because 90% of the people there had no masks on and weren't social distancing. And so we didn't want to get anywhere near them. So we walked along the grass and then, you know, made our way forward. And as we sussed out the situation, And then got closer to the Capitol grounds and the crowd that was there. Oh, we were on the backside of the Capitol, not the front. We would go around to the front subsequently, but we started out on the backside. We were taking video. We were worried about taking video. My wife had a like entry level professional grade camera lens on, so the big, you know, big zoom on it. And I just had my iPhone. She had her iPhone. And we started video. She started taking pictures, and I was initially concerned about us taking pictures and we would stand out, you know, beyond having masks on. But everybody was taking pictures. They were taking pictures themselves. It was like, it was a celebration. It was
right.
They were all excited to be there, and everyone wanted to commemorate themselves being there. So we were taking a lot of video, and then eventually we ended up on the very close to the Capitol on the other side were a number of police cars and, you know, like Capitol Police. There were some Metro Police cars that had been the Capitol EMT was there. And then that SWAT team was there. And we basically went over and situated ourselves in the center of that, less because this is like, oh, where this is law enforcement, we should surround ourselves with, you know, the SWAT team, stand near the SWAT team. Mm-hmm. Then it was, we could stand near parked cars and be close to the action, but stand between the police cars so that nobody could come near us who wasn't wearing a mask, which was like everybody.
So you were there, your wife, a photographer, and is this like as in a journalistic sense to send as a freelancer to outlets?
No. This is just for her own, like, you know, for posterity and for you know, putting together her own like collection of photos she had from the different protests together. And she guilted me in by saying, like, you're an historian of revolutionary America and democracy. Like, what are you, like, this is going to be an historic event. You got to be there. And so,
was it going to be a book? Is she putting it together in ultimate?
No, no, there was like no intention to do that. It was just in part to be there. Like, this is, you know, she had a feeling something was going to happen or just be an historic event. And so we went down. We had no idea we were going to be in the midst of an actual insurrection.
Know that it was, and because that's what I was wondering, like that it was this serious, this dangerous, this deadly.
No, we had no idea at that point. I mean, we had been listening to CNN on the, on you know, streaming on the way in, on the drive in, but we didn't have any sense about even, you know, at that point, by the time we got there, that there was anything, you know, this has turned violent in the way it had.
So when you were there, did you see, you didn't see anything that it was destructive on the outside of the Capitol?
On the backside, no, there wasn't. I mean, we saw a lot of people who had been in the fray. And when we got home, we didn't realize like how in the fray they were. Because right. What happened was most of the people who went in after they got pepper sprayed, after the Capitol Police inside started pepper spraying, and after Ashley Babbitt was shot, a lot of the people who had been, you know, they came out the back. So this was like the Proud Boys, Oath Keepers and others. So we were milling about right next to a lot of the people who had, you know, who had been inside and done a lot of the damage and violence inside. We were right there, you know, with them in the back because we were, and literally right next to them at one point, because when they went to get Ashley Babbitt, and they cleared us out. They moved us, they, you know, asked us to move away from the cars, and we were over near the Capitol. Like, I was literally on the corner of the Capitol building with my hand on it. And then I went back into like a couple steps back into the bushes there, because there were, you know, people were all being crowded in and they didn't have any masks on. And
so you, the timing basically was afterwards.
It was while it was going on. But after they had stormed the Capitol, while we were there in the back, somebody came out to the top steps and shouted, you know, girl's been shot, girl's been shot. You know, they shot her. And then, you know, then the crowd started to get really, you know, you started to hear more expressions of anger. They started to turn on the police and shout things against the police. And that was one of the really bizarre things there, was the relationship between bizarre and telling too, was the relationship between the crowd and the Capitol Police. And I know we've found out recently that there were Capitol Police who were likely complicit in this. There's a couple of people who have been suspended, like at least 15 people under investigation, you know, lots of reports of black officers having said, yeah, there's white supremacists on the force. So we know there's some complicity, but all of the Capitol officers that we saw were just like people trying to do their jobs, and they looked frightened, and they had people coming up into their faces and shouting at them, screaming, like right up to their faces with no mask on, just screaming at them. But the crowd, we heard expressions of this at several different times, and in some of the footage from inside the Capitol, you can hear these kinds of things being said to law enforcement officers, which is like, we had your back. Like, we had your back during the summer when everyone hated you, like during the Black Lives Matter protest. And now it's your time to have our back. Like, now you have to be loyal to us. And so there's this expectation of loyalty, and that the groups like the Proud Boys and Oath Keepers feel like they had earned the loyalty, or should have the loyalty of the police. And if they didn't get it, then they turned on them and started calling them traitors and murderers. And, you know, my wife has this amazing video of this guy, right? So we were right there against the Capitol building, trying to social distance as best we could. And, after they wheeled out Ashley Babbitt, who I was, you know, 10 feet away from the stretcher, they wheeled out. I saw her eyes were open. They weren't blinking. They were pretty glassy. My guess was that she had already died, and they weren't covering the body because they were worried the thing would explode if people knew she was dead. Right. I mean, I don't know that for a fact, but there was blood. I mean, there was just blood everywhere on her. But after that, it's this guy in, he had a green Field and Stream sweatshirt on with like gear over it. And he was like out of shape, pretty pudgy guy. And he turns to, my wife is filming and turns to the camera and is like, they're the police. They're not our friends. They are the muscle of the government. They are here to take our guns and to put our kids in concentration camps. This kind of entitled conspiracy theory, right, that would turn against the police, that they had the right to be there. This is their, these are entitlement and sense of possession, that this was their building, that these were their police and the police should be loyal to them, was really astonishing. There's a great video that once that tweet went viral, a math professor at College Park, University of Maryland College Park, who had been at the, he had been there earlier. He had been from the march for the White House to the Capitol. And he had been like me, he'd just been there to observe and took video. And then he left about, before anything, the violence happened, when the crowd started to sort of get kind of pumped up, he like, I got to get out, I'm getting out of here. But he has video of the start of the march from the White House to the Capitol. It's just chilling. It's the Proud Boys and probably Oath Keepers and the rest. We know the Proud Boys because they have like the Enrique did nothing wrong, the leader of the Proud Boys who had been banned from D.C. And they start the march, like the whole crowd. They're the leaders of the march down that Trump told them to march down. But they're in the front. They are positioned themselves in the front. And they start the march by chanting, whose streets? Our streets. Whose streets? Our streets. And that was the sense we got everywhere. Like, we heard people talking about the Capitol. This is our Capitol. This is our house. We paid for it. It's ours. And then we should be able to do whatever we want with it.
And that was the theme that we heard inside. This is our house. This
exactly.
This is my desk with Speaker Pelosi.
Yeah. So this extreme white entitlement to these spaces and to public officers and to public spaces, and no sense that like this, like, you know, like that anything should be otherwise. And clearly people who hadn't, like, they weren't expecting or anticipating the kind of consequences that they got, or they were, and that they were pretty prepared for violence with it and geared up for battle. But we really got this, like, they all can, like, this was 1776 and they're patriots. I mean, they called each other patriots or revolutionaries, but the greeting was patriot, like citizen in the French Revolution, right? It's, they were all, greeting patriots and called, we were greeted as patriots numerous times. We were told not to go in one direction because, don't go over there, hon. They're gassing the patriots, right? That was the mindset they're at this moment in history where they're going to, reclaim the revolution and reclaim, make America great again by this.
And by the way, in one of his early videos, President Trump referred to them as patriots.
Yeah. And that's common. That language is common on the right, with like QAnon and a lot of these other groups.
All the different videos and pictures you took, have you been in touch with the police or the FBI?
Oh yeah, the first thing we did when we got home was upload it all to the FBI. Mm-hmm. So to the FBI website, because we realized once we got a sense of how bad this has been, we were just like, put them on up. And my wife was suggesting, she said, you should really write something up. And it took me days before I did that, because I thought, we were there. There's surely were lots of other people there. There were surely lots of other journalists there. And I'm, what am I going to add to it? But I guess one of the reasons my piece went viral was that there weren't on the outside, right? Most of the Capitol journalists were hunkered down inside. A lot of the official journalists on the outside were, had been attacked by the crowds and had their equipment taken and destroyed. And the independent journalists had jumped in with the crowd to film it as it was happening, which
right.
you know, thank God for them. That's some
brave. ITV, I saw, did that.
Yeah, I mean, that's brave stuff.
Yeah.
They are the journalistic heroes of this, those independent journalists who went in there. So we were really some of the few non-participant observers who were on the outside, who then reported back about it. And, you know, apart from all these people who are posting pictures to Instagram and Facebook of their seditious activities.
Right. And doing Facebook Live. And, you know, it's interesting.
Yeah.
You mentioned about COVID and not wearing a mask. And that is ironically helping identify many of these
people. Yeah. Yeah. I was like, you know, pro tip for, you know, insurrectionists, don't combine a maskless protest with sedition. You know, it's not. Yeah. So not a good combo.
You were sticking out more with a mask, I guess.
Yeah, we were worried about that a little bit. We were only worried a couple of times about being like for our physical safety. And one was when they had wheeled Ashley Babbitt out when the crowd started to get pretty angry at the police. And I wasn't worried about anything happening to us, but I was worried about, you know, either getting COVID or being like in the wrong place at the wrong time. And it was shortly after that, and that fact that they were getting riled up was when we left the back and went around to the side. And around the side was of the Capitol, there were a lot of, like the guy in the Camp Auschwitz sweatshirt.
Yeah.
He was over there, and a couple of the other like leaders were over there. And they were in a circle all like really angrily. You know, they died, they shot her, you know, and they were trying to whip up the crowd. And there was a lot of that kind of thing, you know, in retrospect, once news, things I hadn't quite thought about or placed when we were there, that when a lot of the reports have come out about how well planned this was and execute, like there is a definite strategic battle plan for this and game plan. And there were some details of this that I didn't focus on that now I think make more sense. So like when these guys were in a circle, they were clearly trying to whip up the crowd, like keep the energy of the crowd up. And we also remember like when we showed up, like periodically you would hear some sound system somewhere amongst the protesters, amongst the rioters, that it was a good one too, because it was loud and clear, and it was different speeches of Donald Trump would be played, right? As they were trying to like get the crowd to go back in. Like at one point they're trying to get them to go back in, you know, these steps are open, it's open over here, and try to get, and they start playing speeches of Donald Trump as like a motivating thing. Like I hadn't thought about that as a, you know, as one of those details I was focused on until these reports, like, wow, that was, you know, they had a plan, you know, it's like Pied Piper, play the Trump speech,
right.
Get them riled up and they'll come to it. Cause he had promised to be there. Right. So some of them maybe were, you know,
thinking
they
was,
were there.
Yeah.
Cause there was a clear battle plan and game plan by the folks who were, you know, who were in their commando outfits and the rest of it ready to, you know, weekend commando gear ready to go, you know, weekend militia. But there were a lot of people who weren't dressed that way, who were dressed, you know, pretty nicely. This was a largely middle class, even upper middle class crowd. It skewed middle age, you know, very, very white. It was not exclusively white, right? There were people of color who were there, but the vast majority were white. And they looked like your neighbors, your aunt, your uncle, your brother-in-law, your, right? I mean, these were normalish, average white people in appearance. You know, there's like North Face jackets there. And,
right.
And Under Armour backpacks. And right. So these are just people with some money. And so the first guy we saw who had been pepper sprayed was, he was wearing what appeared to be a Duke University alumni sweater. Like, it's not a Duke basketball swaggy thing, mm-hmm. but like a sweater with an embroidered Duke emblem on it. And, you know, and so it was and the people around him, right, were fairly well dressed, and so there was a, the average nature of the crowd, the white normal nature of the crowd was pretty disconcerting, especially because of the violent rhetoric we're hearing.
There's much more of my conversation with Terry Bowden. In the next segment, he talks about violence at the insurrection from his perspective, the total lack of law enforcement on hand, and his thoughts on Donald Trump facing a second Senate conviction.
Were you, though, at the point where you were you the one more of a witness and everyone else was more actively involved?
Yeah, I mean, if there were other people who, I mean, yes, but I don't know how many other people were doing that because we weren't outing ourselves to each other. We're like, hi, we're, right. You know, we don't belong. You know, my wife was like, someone said something about the Patriots to her. And she's like, yes, Patriots, because you didn't want to say the wrong thing.
Right. So there was, you had to be careful still, even though you weren't worried about lives.
We recognize some of these people who were the pretty hardcore white supremacists around, and you are surrounded by people who are dressed to fight. We took advantage of our whiteness and our middle-aged invisibility, we were dressed, we were careful when we went in not to wear things that were black outside of our coats that we had on.
Right.
We didn't want to be, labeled Antifa. And right. And by the way, they were all convinced, people on the outside were saying, when they heard about violence inside, was it Antifa? They're all like, must be Antifa. And it's like, no, it's these people over here who are Trump supporters who are admitting doing it, who are Proud Boys, who are proud of what they had done, they weren't going to share the spotlight with Antifa. Now later, of course, there's Ashley Babbitt was Antifa,
Right. That became the narrative from, the right wing.
Right. And there was a lot of downplaying of the violence as well, or really playing victim, right? So there's this one guy who's in the videos inside the Jaden X videos outside the speaker's lobby. And he was right there next to Ashley Babbitt. He was right there next to her. And he's one of the ones yelling at the cops. Everyone hated you last summer. We had your back. Now you need to have ours. And he's angry. He's yelling at them to get out of the way. We don't want to hurt you. Right. But we will. That's the we just want to get in. Just open the door. Just let us through. And on the outside, he's explaining to people what had happened. This was after we had been, I was standing, this was right when I was up against the Capitol building after the SWAT team and EMTs went in and they'd pushed all of us to the side. And so he's right in front of me and he starts basically saying, yeah, I was right with her when she got shot. And I was immediately flipped up my camera and started the film. And which wasn't a big deal because everybody else was doing it too. Their people who had been involved were doing the same thing. And so what happened is, he starts going on. He's like, yeah, we were pounding on the windows and breaking glass and the rest of it. But, which maybe wasn't the nicest thing to do, but they shouldn't have shot her. They shouldn't have shot her for that. And, they could have just pushed her back, which is it's their fault.
Right.
It's the police's fault. We're the actual victims here. The actual victims are us. They should have just opened the door. And if they didn't, this is what happens. And so they didn't have to shoot her.
Yeah, I heard someone saying something about the police, in effect that we're friends with the police until we're not, something.
Yeah.
If they're not with us, then we're no longer with them, kind of.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And that was everywhere. That was in the front and the back and the side. We heard similar kinds of things. When the Capitol Police reinforcements came up, there was, a mixed reception for them. And that was a couple dozen officers. Because when we were on the side, they marched. That's when those reinforcements arrived. And then when we went around the front, we were pretty far back. We didn't get close to the Capitol because the crowds were too densely packed in the front.
Right.
But so we got a good vista from like around where the reflecting pool starts and saw, and that was like, that was disturbing in retrospect. When we were there, it was just sort of like a big celebration. Like people were all seemed pretty excited and happy. And these were, again, a lot of people who had been there through the whole thing, who had witnessed the violence in the front, witnessed the fights and the beating and the, you know, the way in which they, you know, they had beaten with hockey sticks and baseball bats and, you know, throwing fire extinguishers and, you know, to get in. And so we hadn't seen that. We didn't know that had happened. I mean, part of what you have to remember is that we are, when there are very big protests, lots of people in the Capitol and everyone's on their cell phones, you lose cell service. Like you can maybe get a text, you know, the periodic text will come through, but you're not going to stream any media. You're, you know, even loading Twitter was hard. So we didn't, and we were also just wanted to keep our eyes about us and wits about us because, you know, you don't want to, it's COVID, you know, it was like zombies. You were like trying to avoid the people with COVID, you know, who weren't wearing masks and more than you were worried about somebody coming up and whacking you. You know, we didn't think that was going to happen because we were, you know, middle-aged white folks.
Did you see people with weapons at all?
We saw people not with weapons, but with like sticks, you know, with like the things that they've been holding their protest signs and there were
flags.
Yeah. Lots and lots of flags. I mean, that was one of the things that was also different from the earlier protest. Each of the other protests we had been, I mean, DC knows how to do protests. And one of the rules of protests in DC is that you don't have, like when there's large numbers of people, you are not allowed to have things, you know, there's specific rules, like no weapons, no body armor, no poles or sticks. If you want to carry signs, it has to be like cardboard, you know, cardboard rolls or whatever you can affix the signs to, but you can't have sticks or anything that could potentially be used as a weapon. And like everybody had things that could be used as a weapon, which were subsequently used as weapons, right? Some of those poles that were hanging signs on them were baseball bats, you know?
Right.
And but we did not see that in the back or when we walked around the front, the kinds of things you can see in the video. We just saw sort of a crowd that was this weird combination of both jubilant and angry, like jubilant anger, right? That they were excited, but really mad.
Right. And it's a dangerous combination.
It's a dangerous combination. And that there was a clear, we heard all over the place, like the casual discussions of violence of executing Pelosi or Mike Pence, of that, you know, this is what you do to traitors, and that this was just the beginning. You know, most of the people there leaving were like, this was just the beginning. We didn't see a sense of horror at the, or anyone who was like, even seemed particularly uncomfortable by the fact that there were so many obvious white nationalists there. A lot of them wearing, you know, carrying flags or wearing clothing that had, you know, insignia on it or things like that, that was clearly like anti-Semitic or racist. But the rest of them, you know, they're standing shoulder to shoulder with the guys in the, you know, evangelical Christians in their Jesus caps, and the nicely dressed guy and, you know, who's got the North Face jacket. And so what my impression was that they're like, this is the base of the Republican Party. Like, this is the different factions that are a cross section of the Republican Party, you know, clearly terribly radicalized. And the mild mannered nature of a lot of the people that we saw, right? I mean, it was, you know, like I said, it was your aunts and uncles, your brothers and sisters. It was just normal looking white people, and who were talking about violence in such casual ways. At the time, it seemed like a lot of bravado because we didn't know what had happened. But I don't know, you know, like, where's the line? I get the sense that a lot of these people weren't going to march and storm the Capitol and beat up police and the rest of it. They weren't going to hang anybody. But if they constructed a gallows out there, you know, there was like and that was a real lumber gallows. Like, that was a gallows that potentially was intended to be used, right? Why would you bring such heavy lumber in there to make something that was symbolic? And my guess is if they had brought Nancy Pelosi out of there, certainly some of the crowd would have, you know, would have repelled in horror. But I'm guessing a lot of that crowd would have cheered. And like, that's how amped up these people were. That's how deeply they have embraced these conspiracy theories, whether it's, you know, QAnon and they were fighting the pedophile rings, or, you know, just simply that Joe Biden stole the election. You know, he's a corrupt, owned by the Chinese Communist Party and stole the election. We saw a lot of anti-communist stuff there. There was a lot of like Chinese people who had, you know, anti-CCP stuff, claiming that the Democrats are the Chinese Communist Party. There were a number of flags. I didn't even know the flag. I didn't even recognize it. It was a yellowish orange stripes on it, which turns out to be the flag of the old South Korean government.
Oh.
That had been overrun by, I think it was one overrun by communists. And so they were like, there's a lot of that real strong anti-communist stuff and links, basically saying the Democrats were communists. So,
right.
So there's a bunch of that around some of these Keck flags. I don't know if you're familiar with that, like the KEK. This is a lot of the alt-right folks who come out of the gamer crowd.
Mm-hmm.
That KEK was, I think, Korean, like for LOL, laugh out loud. So when mm-hmm. they would do LOL, it would translate through these gaming translation systems as KEKEKEKEK. And so they began to adopt Keck as a thing they would say. And then some of them found out that there was an Egyptian god called Keck, who was the frog-headed god of chaos. And of course, you know, they've got Pepe the Frog as one of their emblems, and they went berserk over that and adopted it. So we saw these Keck flags all over the place too, which is kind of like there's this weird cosplay kind of thing going on. Like the, you know, like, oh, it's just joking, we're just kidding. Like the Viking guy with the,
right.
You know, and they're, you know, people dressed up ridiculous ways as like, you know, Uncle Sam and stuff. And even with the Keck flags, that kind of playful, plausible deniability, kind of like, oh, we're just joking, you know, like Trump always does when he threatens violence or makes these incendiary statements, and he's like, oh, he's just joking.
Pushes back a little, right.
Yeah. And so there's that seemed to be part of what that whole stance was.
So as you mentioned at the beginning, you've covered and been to various protests on, you know, the left, the right, Trump, BLM. Did you see a difference? Because as you pointed out, and many have said, especially at the beginning, the law enforcement presence was very limited here.
Yeah, we didn't see the law enforcement presence on the front, except at the end. Like, so, I mean, and again, it looked like a really skeleton crew of Capitol officers on the backside and on the sides. And even in the front, by the time we got around to the front, it was like they were starting to try to get the protesters out. And there were a number of Capitol officers along the steps, but it looked like you're when you attend a sporting event and they're trying to get the crowd out at the end, they're not pushing them out. They're just standing there encouraging people to go and like standing so that people can direct people who are coming back not to come back. Like that's what it seemed like. It was basically looked like casual crowd control rather than any kind of sustained effort to try to actually force them out.
And compared to other protests
you've seen? Nothing. Like there were more people at the March for Science with Bill Nye the Science Guy, you know, way more than there were here. And what got me was that once it was clear that this thing had gone violent, I mean, as I said, we were there for like 3 hours and there were no other forces, that no reinforcements showed up. And, you know, we learned that Larry Hogan, the governor of Maryland, was calling to, he had the National Guard and state police and others ready to go in, but needed permission.
Right.
Their Metro Police clearly didn't have permission. We saw Metro Police cars on the outskirts, but they weren't on Capitol grounds. It was only the Capitol Police and that one FBI SWAT team were the only federal forces that we saw. Again, we had an incredibly false sense of safety and security based on the lack of police presence there. Because we thought, well, I can't. It's DC, you know. Like if that's happening, like the SWAT teams would be descending in helicopters and, you know, being telling everybody to get out and loudspeakers and the rest. But there was nothing, nothing.
Capitol Police chief had to resign, and I'm sure there'll be more of this.
Oh, I'm sure. Look, there's no question that this was intentional over incompetence. There's no way you end up with that limited a police force, federal force, on those grounds with the threats of violence that were there, with the incidents of violence that were there, for as long as it was, without complicity in administration somewhere.
Right.
That there had to be people, whether that's from Trump on down or, you know, but it's not, I don't buy the incompetence angle. Like, oh, you didn't get the police, you know, we didn't get the threat reports. I'm like, you don't have to get the threat reports. Anybody who's been on Twitter or read a newspaper knew that there was, this was a strong possibility for violence. You can't, you're telling me our FBI and intelligence agencies didn't all know what was likely to go down here. I cannot believe, if that's the case, we need to clean house in the FBI and our intelligence agencies and get people who are like, have a clue, because that's, I cannot believe that, you know, I don't believe that.
Yeah.
Because we've been, the DC does protests, right. You know, like the Trump era did not invent protests in Washington, DC. It may have increased the size of some of them, but it didn't, like, they're used to this. They're good at this. This is what they do.
Right.
And to treat it when I got back, there was the part of the video of that University of Maryland math professor sent me was he had shots of the march, right? He had shots at the beginning of the march and there's no police there, right? March for Science, there's police every block, in the middle of blocks. Like there is the route of the march was lined with police, and they were around the Capitol, and there just, this just wasn't, you know, like somebody called off the dogs, you know, these people walked where they wanted to walk. And they had a sense of entitlement, and there was nobody to tell them otherwise. And as soon as they told them otherwise, they, you know, they got violent and made it happen, you know, forced themselves in.
So this all comes as President Trump, within a week of this, or a week to the day, was impeached by the House and now will await a Senate trial. Do you agree the article of impeachment was for inciting the insurrection? And should he be convicted?
Yeah, I mean, I think yes to both. I mean, I don't, you know, I'm partisan on that issue, but just on the merits of what happened, my God, like they were stoking that crowd for violence with those speeches, and Trump, Rudy Giuliani, that clearly there were orders somewhere for the basically standing down of law enforcement around the protest. I mean, and they withheld reinforcements, you know, people are calling from the Capitol inside. So I don't see how it's anything but an insurrection, you know, once all this starts to come out, that may be the lesser of the charges, you know, because they were hunting, you know, those crowds were hunting. They were hunting Mike Pence. They were hunting Nancy Pelosi. And if it not been for some quick thinking and movement by Capitol officers inside, they could have gotten into the different chambers, you know. I didn't want to think what would have happened if that had happened.
Yeah, I mean, one person, I think he had gotten arrested, had zip ties.
Yeah, they're not playing around, right? That's planned. What are you there for if not to take hostages?
Right.
And pretty clearly, they were willing to kill. So, and again, it doesn't have to be the whole crowd, because they don't need the whole crowd to do that. You know, you can get the guys in the North Face jackets and the Duke sweaters to line up and, you know, get them roused up to follow you in, and they may go out the other side after getting pepper sprayed, but, you know, they've served their purpose. They've overwhelmed the force inside. It's worrisome, the level of organization by groups who I'm not sure how much they buy into all of the conspiracy theories in some of these, especially white nationalist groups. You know, they have their own agendas and purposes. But they are clearly able to manipulate like QAnon people and others who are just simply, you know, maybe riled up by Fox News telling them that the election was stolen, and, you know, the right-wing misinformation campaigns. And which really makes me worried about what we're going to face in the next, you know, on or around an inauguration. Mm-hmm. And afterwards. And I'm not so worried about DC because they're, you know, they got National Guard sleeping on the floors of the Capitol. My worry is like Michigan and Virginia with, you know, and it's these open carry states where people can come up with their semi-automatic weapons right to the Capitol. I mean, that's like, that's the real flashpoint and danger. That's what I'm really afraid of.
Thanks again to Terry Bowden, who is incidentally the nephew of Jim Bowden, former ballplayer and sportscaster, but perhaps most remembered for his candid autobiography, Ball 4. If you'd like to hear more from my conversation with Terry, please join my Patreon.com Here Now the News page. There you'll find premium content from this and other interviews. Please share the episode as well with others. If you have any comments or questions, find me on Twitter at Jerry Barmash, email herenowthenewsjb@gmail.com, and like my Here Now the News Facebook page for additional posts, including live streams. Thanks for listening. I'm Jerry Barmash, and this is Here Now the News.